Good evening and welcome to this special Friday edition of the KRFP Evening Report for October 16th, 2015. On today's show, we have ongoing coverage of the Moscow City Council election with an interview with candidate John Freeland. But first, this news. An Idaho physician has received Food and Drug Administration approval to administer the drug Epidiolex, made by extracting cannabidiol oil from cannabis, to 25 children in the state. The expanded access FDA program, which will begin in a few weeks, will be the first legal use of medical marijuana under Idaho state law. In April, Governor Butch Otter vetoed a bill that would allow the use of cannabidiol by children with particular forms of chronic epilepsy that cause frequent seizures. Otter's veto message opened the window for use under FDA trials. Epidiolex was developed by a British pharmaceutical firm to treat certain types of epilepsy in children, and it currently is undergoing trials. Under the expanded access program, no Idaho child would receive a placebo. One of the mothers who lobbied in Boise this year for legalized cannabidiol oil for children with epilepsy told the Spokesman Review website, "The process Idaho is using is frustrating." Claire Carey, whose 10-year-old daughter Alexis has had seizures since she was 2 months old, said they're helping 25 children at most. "It just made me lose all hope. The only way we are going to get access in Idaho is with a federal bill." Only Idaho children who have tried at least 4 separate medications for their seizures and have at least 4 seizures a month are eligible for the cannabidiol program. The Spokesman Review reports more than 1,500 children might be eligible under those terms in the state. Idaho Drug Policy Office Director Alicia Figueroa said of the Epidiolex program, "This is really what we want to see happen, is that we follow the approved FDA process to ensure that medications that we receive have gone through the proper vetting process." When vetoing the bill, Otter said the legislation asks officials to ignore the potential for abuse or misuse. When the cannabidiol bill was passed by the legislature, parents said stronger pharmaceuticals with multiple side effects did not cure their children's seizures. One father testified to a legislative committee his daughter had 200 seizures a day until he began treating her with cannabidiol oil, and then she didn't have a seizure for 30 days. Pullman residents living on Center Street met with some city council members and other city officials to discuss ongoing traffic issues on their street this week. According to a report in the Daily News, about 30 people met in city council chambers to address a study by the firm Taylor Engineering. Center Street intersects South Grand Avenue and travels west and uphill towards Wawawi Road. The lead engineer on the report, Ron Pace, said there is justification for a traffic light at the intersection of Center Street and Grand Avenue. Residents say speeding cars driving past the crosswalk as pedestrians try to use it are a problem. The study says over 70 pedestrians use the crosswalk at the intersection of Fountain and Center Streets daily, and 35 people cross at Summer and Center Streets each day. The study ruled out a stop sign in the middle of the hill, which had been suggested by some of the residents. 10-year Center Street resident Scott Hodge told the group about one car he witnessed traveling well over 40 miles per hour, which passed him illegally because the driver apparently did not want to go the posted speed. Of the incident, Hodge said, "He was so irritated to travel at 25, so he flew by me with his finger out the window." Pace told the group the study offers 4 solutions to the problem. One would be to install traffic circle intersections at Center and Main Streets and at Itani Drive and Center Street. Traffic circles contain obstructions intended to divert and slow motorists. Each traffic circle would cost between $15,000 and $20,000. A second alternative would be a $40,000 project to narrow the intersection of Panorama and Center Streets and another intersection at Center and Itani Drive. This would include handicapped accessible ramps and re-engineered sidewalks. A third option would be to install permanent radar speed signs, although residents say that has been tried before and it failed. A fourth alternative would be to restripe crosswalks and create more ADA accessible ramps. Hodge questioned the study's accuracy. He said without enforcement, drivers will only check their speed and continue speeding. Hodge said he would like to see three traffic circles with radar signs and enforcement. The Moscow Urban Renewal Agency agreed yesterday to hire the Moscow firms Terra Graphics Environmental Engineering and Strata to design and construct systems to clean up the 0.85-acre site at the corner of 6th and Jackson Streets. The Urban Renewal Agency plans to remove nitrates and nutrients from the soil and then sell the land to Sangria Downtown LLC, who plan to build a two-story building, including a restaurant at the corner. Sangria Downtown owns Maya Lena Restaurant at 6th and Main Streets. According to an account of the Urban Renewal Agency meeting in the Daily News, Moscow Community Development Director Bill Belknap said the work, which includes digging up soil down to 15 feet deep, will cost less than $191,000. In other Urban Renewal Agency news, the agency reported $179,000 in tax increment finance revenue for the Legacy Crossing District for the just completed fiscal year. The agency had projected $100,000 in revenue for fiscal year 2015 and predicts $140,000 in revenue for fiscal year 2016. Under Idaho urban renewal law, the agency can collect property tax revenue for any increase in value of properties during the life of the district to use for infrastructure within the urban renewal district. The Legacy Crossing urban renewal area is focusing on the land between downtown and the University of Idaho, although the district itself extends to 3rd Street in the north and up the Troy Highway and even includes part of downtown. Gonzaga University in Spokane has received a $55 million bequest from Myrtle Waldson, which includes three Seattle waterfront properties worth tens of millions of dollars. The longtime Spokane philanthropist died last year when she was 104 years old. According to the Spokesman Review, Gonzaga President Thane McCullough said at Waldson's request, about $25 million of the donations will pay for scholarships to bridge the affordability gap for students from low-income families. The university announced yesterday it wants to raise $250 million for new buildings, programs, and scholarships. An estimated $60 million would be used for improvements to the Student Union building, and another $30 million would be used to build the Waldson Center for the Performing Arts on the west side of the Spokane campus, starting in 2018. The university has raised $183 million so far in its campaign. The University of Washington in Seattle this week announced the hiring of Anna Marie Cousse as the school's first permanent female president. The 59-year-old Cousse was born in Cuba and was brought to the United States by her family in 1962 when she was 3 years old. Her father had been Cuban Minister of Education. She has been serving as interim president since March when former President Michael Young announced he would move to Texas A&M University to take the president's job there. During her first months on the job, Cousse adopted a $15 per hour minimum wage at the university, finalized an innovation exchange program with Tsinghua University in Beijing, supported a legislative initiative to lower tuition at state schools, and spoke frequently about diversity, racism, and homophobia. The Spokane Police Department has released the name of the three officers who shot and wounded a man in the Hilliard neighborhood Monday morning. The department said officers Christopher McMurtry, Joseph Matt and Stanley Stadelman wounded 36-year-old domestic violence suspect Jason M. Smith. Police say they shot Smith because he ignored their commands to get out of his truck and rammed patrol cars as he was trying to get away after police pulled their cars in behind his car in a Longfellow Avenue driveway. The Spokane County Sheriff's Department is leading an investigation into the shooting. Smith's injuries are not life-threatening. Police filed charges related to assault and domestic violence against Smith. The U.S. Department of Agriculture announced yesterday it will give $5.9 million in grants to Washington and Idaho farmers to improve specialty crop production. Funding for the grants is intended to help multiple organizations increase their competitiveness in specialty crops. Grant money will be dispersed through each state's agriculture department for crops such as fruits and vegetables, tree nuts, dried fruits, and nursery crops. Idaho will receive $1.8 million for 16 projects, and Washington will get $4.1 million for 24 projects. Regional recipients include the Clearwater Economic Development Association, which will receive $67,144 to create a new wine industry in the Lewiston-Clarkston Valley. The University of Idaho, which will receive $162,878 for table grape research, and the USA Dry Pea and Lentil Association, which will get $140,000. Washington State University will receive grant money for agricultural projects and research on raspberries, grapevines, apples, and orchard management. Spokane school officials have expelled a 9-year-old boy at Logan Elementary School for bringing a gun to his bus stop. The alleged incident took place Wednesday morning. The boy told other students at the bus stop he found the gun in his backyard and allowed some of them to handle it before returning it to his house. The weapon was unloaded. School resource officer Kevin Morrison said the boy was taken to a juvenile detention center and, after being charged with possession of a gun, was released into his parents' custody. Morrison said school officials will discuss the gravity of the matter with the boy and said there is no indication the boy planned any harm. About 400 firefighters are battling a wildfire that started Saturday in the mountains about 40 miles northeast of Boise near Idaho City. The fire, which investigators say was human-caused, grew by 8 square miles yesterday. As of this afternoon, officials said it was 60% contained. The Associated Press reported the fire grew quickly after being fanned by strong winds. Fire spokesperson Denise Cobb said firefighters have made good progress against the blaze, but weather will be a big factor. Cobb said the blaze caught firefighters off guard because no one was expecting new fires at this time of year, and many fire crews had already disbanded for the year. The fire is moving toward an area without houses and is burning on state and federal land. Smoke from the fire traveled into Boise, where air quality was listed as unhealthy this morning. And at least one air quality monitoring station in Boise was rating the air quality unhealthy as of 5 p.m. Pacific time today. A federal judge has ruled a lawsuit against a contractor at Hanford Nuclear Reservation can move forward. The lawsuit claims several contractors conspired to set up a facade of small businesses that allowed them to receive contracts they would otherwise not be eligible for. The Tri-Cities Herald reported the lawsuit was filed by Savage Logistics, a firm that had been seeking a cleanup contract at Hanford. Workers made plutonium for nuclear weapons at the Central Washington site for decades, and now the reservation has the nation's largest collection of nuclear waste. The cleanup is costing more than $2 billion a year. The Associated Press reported one of the subcontractors who won a contract for cleanup at Hanford had no experience in handling nuclear waste, no equipment, and no employees. An insurance company has been fined $310,000 for improperly charging Washington State University students for health insurance. Washington Insurance Commissioner Mike Kreidler said the state has fined the National Union Fire Insurance Company of Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, $200,000 because its rates for health insurance plans were figured incorrectly for the 2014 to 2015 school year. Kreidler said the state has imposed an additional $110,000 fine against the company for raising insurance rates in 2011 without going through the proper process with the state insurance office. Washington's first charter school is facing more financial troubles after the state superintendent of public instruction ordered the school to repay money it received based on enrollment estimates that were later adjusted down. The school, First Place Scholars of Seattle, originally had an entire school year to repay the state, but following a Supreme Court ruling last month that says charter schools are unconstitutional, the school must repay the money by January. The school currently has an enrollment of 110 students. We now continue our series of Moscow City Council candidate interviews with John Freeland Wanvig, who will appear on the ballot as John Freeland. Four candidates are running for three open at-large seats on the six-seat council. Dan Karskalin and Jim Boland are the incumbents, and Catherine Bonzo and John Freeland are trying to get on the council for the first time. Voters can cast ballots for up to three in the November 3rd election. Mayor Bill Lambert and Councilmembers Walter Steed, Art Betke, and John Weber have 2 years remaining in their terms. Councilmember Wayne Krause has opted not to run for re-election this year. Freeland is a realtor and works as a marketing specialist for John Kimberling Farmers Insurance and is working on his Bachelor's of Government Science pre-law online through Liberty University. Here's our interview with candidate John Freeland, who spoke on Tuesday.
Well, I think we've been going in a positive direction over the last several years. I'd like to continue to see more business development on a bigger scale than we've been having. I think we need to fix our roads, and that's a big part of possibly bringing in more people, because people like nice roads. Nice roads increase home values. They make it so that your kid, when he's riding his bicycle on the street, isn't going to hit a pothole and end up in the hospital. Makes it so that we just have a more beautiful city in general. Another big part of increasing growth here in Moscow is increasing working with state legislative leaders and leaders at the University of Idaho to help increase enrollment there. Because every new student who comes into town comes with a certain amount of money that will help all local businesses, is the goal. And because every dollar that comes into the local economy does increase beyond that dollar, as we all know. Another big thing I'm looking for is to help combat hunger and poverty here in Moscow and Latah County by bringing together community leaders, churches, food banks, whoever is interested in helping, because as we look at the statistics, since the late 90s, just for instance, the free and reduced student lunch program at the public schools has gone up just enormously in terms of the amount of students who are on that. That's a big issue here in our city, and that's something that I would want to do my best to help combat in any way possible and be a leader on that. Another thing is I think we need some technical courses, whether working with the University of Idaho or LCSC, to bring some in to Moscow so that we can help those who aren't necessarily able to afford college or just who don't want to go to college to be able to get beyond those minimum wage jobs and have a skill level where they can get, you know, $13, $14, $15 an hour.
So. Now, there was a study released by economist Steve Peterson of the University of Idaho right before the last city council election and the mayoral election, and I was wondering if you have an opinion about it. It essentially said that Moscow is regulating business too much and therefore is not being a welcoming place for new businesses. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, Moscow doesn't have business licenses for businesses, and that's a good thing, I think, that we're not overregulated in that way, at least. There might be some changes that we could make on other levels. And Steve's a great guy. When I was at U of I for a year and a half, I had him for one of my economics classes. I have not actually personally seen that study, I'm afraid, but I will review it and see what conclusions he has made. So.
Okay. Well, you know, getting back to the business or the idea of attracting businesses, do you have particular views on zoning and regulation as they relate to businesses?
Well, zoning, we need to be as flexible as possible in terms of getting more businesses in. We've got to, of course, have a balance. We don't want to put a business, you know, right next to a bunch of homes or whatever if it's going to be noisy. But we do have to work as well as we possibly can to be as open to getting businesses in here as possible.
Okay. Do you have any thoughts on the future of Legacy Crossing? I know the Urban Renewal Board awarded the lucrative corner of 6th and Jackson to Myelina's, as opposed to other applicants for that space. And, you know, more generally, the Legacy Crossing area between the university and downtown.
I don't have any real thoughts on it. Not at this time, no.
Okay. I want to ask about the rebranding. What's your view on the plan to spend city money along with University of Idaho and Chamber of Commerce money to come up with a new brand for Moscow? The money allocated was $10,000 by the city, another $10,000 by the university, and $30,000 by the Chamber of Commerce, and they're paying a marketing or branding firm from Spokane to come up with a brand for Moscow.
Well, you know, I've been thinking about this a lot, and, you know, working as a marketing specialist in one of my jobs, and just in general, being who I am and having to deal with marketing on a real estate level and all sorts of other things. I think Moscow, I think we need to market this area, this is just my personal opinion, as the Paradise Valley. Because, I mean, I think that is, I think that's a good name for it. That's just my opinion. Obviously, we could come up with something different. But I definitely believe that we need to market this place as truly a treasure in the Great Northwest, which it indeed is. So.
A lot of people have looked at that issue, say, well, we already have a brand, Heart of the Arts. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I agree. Arts are very important. I like that theme. I think we could have a more overarching, kind of more inclusive name that would really grab people's attention. Moscow itself, absolutely, we are the Heart of the Arts. And I think that's a very important and culturally valued thing that we have here in this city.
Okay. Are you concerned about growth projections? One person said at the League of Women Voters Forum, one of the candidates said they're predicting 30,000 by the year 2030, which seems to be very low growth. A lot could change between now and 2030. There's the climate issues that, you know, maybe earthquakes on the coast and things like that. Do you think maybe those growth projections might be a little bit small, and maybe we could have a large amount of people trying to come here?
I think it's possible. U of I's football team's doing better, especially. Well, that's just one little part of it. But marketing the area better, helping promote the University of Idaho, getting student tuition rates down. You know, the state of Washington, they've decreased tuition at the University of Washington and WSU, and they're in process. They're in process of doing that big project. And I think U of I, we could cut our tuition rates a little bit. You know, 1 in 10 Idaho students goes on to graduate college. 4 out of every 10 high schoolers goes on to college. Only 1 out of those 4 will end up graduating college. And that's a real tragedy. There's a lot of things that play into that. But we need to, I think, reducing tuition a little bit and funding college more from the state level would be a big thing that we could look at possibly in terms of getting more students in here.
Okay. Well, I wasn't intending to touch on every issue during this short interview. So as a matter of wrapping up, John Freeland, any thing that I haven't brought up that you think might be important for voters to know?
Well, I'm running on a pro-business, pro-growth, and listening to you platform. Feel free to call me anytime. My cell phone's always on, and it's 208-596-8521, and I'd be happy to answer any questions that you may have of me. Thank you all so much.
That was Moscow City Council candidate John Freeland speaking in the KRFP studios Tuesday. Freeland is one of four candidates running for three open at-large seats on the Moscow City Council. The other candidates are Dan Karskalin, Jim Boland, and Catherine Bonzo. On Monday morning, on Morning Mix and on Evening Report on Monday, we'll have an interview with Jim Boland, and previously aired interviews with Dan Karskalin and Catherine Bonzo are available for streaming and download on the KRFP website. One question that was asked at the Moscow League of Women Voters Candidates Forum on October 7th was why the candidates feel it is so difficult to grow the city's tax base through development. Here's the answers from candidates John Freeland, followed by Dan Karskalin.
I think a lot of it has to do with marketing. A lot of people, they don't necessarily know about how great of an area this is. I know there's a lot of people who move from California and other places to Coeur d'Alene and Boise, and a lot of people, they kind of overlook this community, and I think we need to be more vocal in terms of just how great of a community this is. We have the best schools around. We have the universities. We have beautiful homes, and hopefully soon, beautiful roads, more beautiful than they are right now, and growing businesses. And I think that's a winning football team would help,
thank
too. I'll say that. So thank you for the question.
I think that part of it is, and has always been, you know, we're really isolated, a lot more isolated than a lot of people really realize, and that's for a lot of people, that's kind of contributes to our quality of life here. It was funny because I was sitting with our old fire chief one time, and I didn't know he was a fan of The Hobbit so much, but he said that he thought of the Palouse as the Shire and Moscow is Hobbiton over here in the corner by itself. And, you know, and that's why a lot of people were here. And it struck me that that was kind of the way we're sitting here. And, you know, we don't have an interstate running through town. We don't have that much rail service anymore. So those things have drawn business away. Our lack of car dealerships, we have a new one in town now, I see. That's a good thing. But a lot of that had to do with demands by the manufacturers on those dealerships. I mean, like when James Toyota moved out of town, they just didn't have there wasn't a place to put it. So that's why they ended up where they were. And I think the same thing happened to our Subaru dealer, that it just was untenable, they thought, to throw that much into it to make it what the manufacturer wanted. So it's one of those things, we have to market ourselves. We're moving forward in that respect, in a way. Something's going to be coming here shortly before the council, I think, as far as how we're going to try and do that. And, you know, hopefully we'll start seeing good things.
That was Moscow City Council candidate Dan Karskalin, preceded by John Freeland at the Moscow League of Women Voters Candidates Forum. Here's the answers from candidates Catherine Bonzo and Jim Boland.
So the question had to do with why is it difficult to grow the base? And we have to go back in time, actually. You need to really remember 2008. 2008 is when we had the Great Recession start. And it kind of goes back to that first question, and we had a bailout. But from that period of time, we got hit by the recession a little later than the rest of the country. I think we're just now coming out of the recession here on the Palouse. I was part of the recession. I was teaching, and I was the last hired, so I was the first released. So I know what it's like to look for a job, and I know what's available in this community for work at $10. And but again, We have this balance in our community between having this beautiful place that we live with the university, with a nonprofit hospital, and we're trying to figure out that. I think that we are just now beginning to have those conversations again. I think we've been through a really divisive time in our community too, right after the recession, and I think it had a lot to do with the religion that came into town. And I saw people talking and not talking and hiding and trying to wonder what was going on. And I think finally everybody's realized that the bad conversations and no conversations, people left. And people didn't want to be part of this. And then the university, we had so many different presidents. The instability affected our community. We've just had a lot of things happen. We're just now beginning to recover. So we're beginning to heal. And we are the heart of the arts. We are the flagship university. We are a great community. We're just beginning to talk again.
I think it's difficult to grow the base for a variety of reasons, but because we don't have the infrastructure, like Dan said, we don't have an interstate, we don't have a rail system that comes through here, makes it more difficult to market. As John said, the marketing efforts are difficult because we don't have a lake like Coeur d'Alene does. We don't have a river that runs right through here, so those resort-type amenities we don't have. We can only sell our quality of life, and the more people that move here, maybe that will water that down somewhat. So it's a difficult sell, but yet we still do have a great quality of life, and there still is a lot of room to grow, and we can still maintain the same quality of life at a much bigger size, I think.
That was Moscow City Council candidate Jim Boland, preceded by Catherine Bonzo, speaking October 7th at the Moscow League of Women Voters Candidates Forum. KRFP will broadcast the Moscow League of Women Voters Candidates Forum in its entirety Wednesday at 2 p.m. Voters can cast ballots for up to three candidates. In-person absentee voting will take place during business hours at the Latah County Clerk's Office until Friday, October 30th at 5 p.m. In Idaho, voters can register at the polls on Election Day. Voters registering on Election Day should bring photo ID plus proof they have lived at their current address for 30 days. Election Day is Tuesday, November 3rd, and polls in Idaho will be open from 8 a.m. until 8 p.m. Well, that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, plus the newscasts you hear during Morning Mix, the recordings of local events, and the public affairs shows, plus the music and arts programming you hear every day on KRFP, be sure to become a member of KRFP. Memberships are $35 a year, $20 for students and low income. You can mail your memberships to KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. That's KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. Or you can go to the KRFP website to find out more ways to help KRFP. I'm Lee Robartis. Alan Solon and Jim Roach assisted with tonight's newscast. Have a pleasant weekend. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman, community radio for the Palouse at 90.3 on your FM dial.